Spokane Symphony began its new season just this last weekend with a pair of concerts, which, by the way, that concert will be broadcast a week from tonight. Tonight will be a season preview, which includes last year's performance of the Brahms First Symphony, but this weekend's concert will be broadcast next week, so that we'll have more time to really process it as it deserves for the great delivery of the great music-making that is going on there. But amidst all this, we do have recitals and things beginning. And Ross Holcomb, the principal trombonist of the Spokane Symphony, is playing a recital 2 days hence, Wednesday night at 8 o'clock at Whitworth. Let's enjoy some of his playing from a recent recital. I spoke earlier of the different sounds of the trombone, and let's enjoy the particular beauty of this piece from a recent recital.
Thank you.
center movement, an andante sostenuto movement of a trombone sonata by Jacques Castoriadis, played by my guest Ross Holcomb, along with Barbara Blagan, that significant pianist who teaches at the University of Montana in Missoula. Good morning, Ross Holcomb.
Hey, how you doing, Vern?
Good, especially after that beautiful music making. That must have been just a really sweet moment for you playing that piece in Missoula a couple of years ago.
Absolutely, it was great. My friend Rob Tapper's the trombone professor out at Montana, and he was formerly out at Eastern Washington where we worked closely together. So I was really happy that he invited me to come out and play a recital and with such a fabulous pianist as Barbara. Yeah. It was a really nice couple of days.
Yeah, nice. And you have a recital coming up on this Wednesday night, just a couple of days hence, and we're going to talk about a lot of that. But just briefly about the trombone in that lyrical sense. Talk about how you approach trombone to make it so lyrical, so much like a singer.
Yeah, well, I really like that the trombone has the slide, and so we can get a few more sort of vocal nuances than some other instruments can, because many trombone players try to make it so clean, and they try to simulate the valves with their slide. They don't want to call attention to the fact that they have a slide in their hand. But I think in some moments it's really nice, and you can get a really kind of what I refer to my students as a swoopy slur. Mm-hmm. It's not so clean, but it has a little swoop in it, and you can kind of hear the connection in the middle of the slur.
Which is how singers do it.
Right.
Yeah, all
and
the time.
String players as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes you can't reach all the way down the fingerboard, so you slide your finger up a little, mm-hmm. and it has a little of that extra nuance to it, which I don't mind getting on the trombone every now and then.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it was really beautifully done in that slow movement. We're going to send you to the other room in a minute to play a piece for trombone solo by Enrique Crespo, an improvisation number one. The first thing about a piece like this is it just, you have to just keep playing, don't it? It's kind of hard work, isn't it?
Yeah, unaccompanied pieces are a little bit of a challenge because you're responsible for 100% of everything. Probably in the orchestra, I'm responsible for the least amount of the music making of any of the playing that I do, because the trombone is just one of 60 pieces mm-hmm. of the puzzle. But even in brass quintet playing, you know, you're one of five. On the rest of the recital, I have a mm-hmm. pianist that'll spell me for, you know, 4 bars here or 10 bars there. But yeah, when you're doing an unaccompanied mm-hmm. piece, you're in the spotlight the whole time and you've got a plan for everything.
Now, does this improvisation purposefully try to use a real range of what the trombone can do?
Yes, this piece, it's really become quite popular in the trombone community because it's this sort of tour de force of trombone technique. He asks you to do just about everything that the instrument can do, from, you know, the extreme range, from the highest notes to the lowest notes, very fast notes, very slow notes, things that require you to take huge breaths and play for a very long time without breathing. Multiple tonguing, trills, I mean, you name it, he stuck it in this piece. And Crespo, being a trombone player himself, I think he really knew what the instrument was capable of, and he wanted to kind of push the bounds a little bit, which it's nice because he makes it challenging, but since he's a trombone player, he makes it challenging in a way that you can actually overcome those challenges, and it's really gratifying when you figure out how to make it work.
Well, let's send you to the studio to do exactly that. My guest, Ross Holcomb, principal trombonist of the Spokane Symphony, so he's had a busy weekend playing with the symphony, and then busy time prior to that with the outdoor concerts and all the different things going on, but kind of the first out of the chute for the concerts coming along of the recitals in our area. Whitworth began classes just last week, and they're kind of in their first full week of classes there at Whitworth, and he has a Wednesday night recital. And so this is this piece, Improvisation Number 1 by Eugene Crespo. Thank you.
Thank you.
From our studio, we've been hearing Improvisation No. 1 by Eugene Crespo, himself a trombonist, played for us by Ross Holcomb, principal trombonist of the Spokane Symphony, who will be doing it in recital. Be doing it in recital this Wednesday night, 8 o'clock, at Whitworth's in the New Music Building, as they like to say in the recital hall there of the Music Building. And Ross, you teach at Whitworth, I presume.
Yes, I do.
You're doing that, so you, like everybody else, had to move aside for the building process and watch a new building being built around an old one.
Yes, it was a little. It's odd because we had the old building and everyone seemed to have space and it was working. Then as soon as the new building was planned and ground was broken and it started construction, all of a sudden it felt like there was no space left in the old building, even though it hadn't changed sizes at all. It just felt like, I guess, we were anticipating having double the space in a year.
Yeah. Well, and it's been a great assist there to have that going. But anyway, played that Improvisation Number 1. Now, when you put together a recital as a trombone teacher at a university, you kind of have several purposes, don't you? You're supposed to be an example to your students. You're supposed to represent to all the students at the music department what a artist recital is. But you're also playing for the general public. How do all those things inform your choice of repertoire?
Well, in this case, I usually like to come up with some sort of theme for my recitals so that the pieces have some sort of thread that connects them. and sometimes the theme can even be something that the pieces don't have in common, like every piece, the composer is from a different nationality, mm-hmm. or every piece is from a different time period, mm-hmm. or something like that. In this case, every piece, well, I guess there's a few themes. Every piece is a 20th century work. It was written, mm-hmm. you know, between the years of 1900 and 2000. Every piece, the composer actually is from a different country, so there's a lot of different nationalities mm-hmm. represented, so a lot of variety in the repertoire. And then as more of a sort of a private, you know, idea for myself, I wanted to pick pieces that either I had never played in recital before or pieces that had been so long since I played them in recital mm-hmm. that it would be nice to do them again and dust them off a little mm-hmm. bit. So it's, you know, old favorites and new favorites, I mm-hmm. guess.
Well, when I was listing the agendas on putting together a recital, I guess I left out the one, which is just the personal challenge for the person playing it, right?
Yeah, and you know, we have a lot more to pick from in the trombone repertoire from the 20th century because it wasn't really until sort of the mid to late 1800s that composers started even considering the trombone as a solo instrument. So there really is a lot of variety in the 20th century repertoire, and so you have the opportunity to pick things that, even though it's 20th century, you know, maybe I should reassure people who might want to come mm-hmm. to the recital, the piece I just played is the most avant-garde thing on the recital. Yeah. Everything else is very tonal, quite tuneful, like you might even go home whistling a few of the melodies, and I really like that about a lot of 20th century music that composers, you know, you had the ones, you know, Schoenberg and Berg and Webern and all them that decided to sort of, you know, do away with the traditional ideas of melody. But there were still many, many composers that decided to keep that ideal going. And I really like some of the melodies that they've come up with for the trombone. And it's nice to see people thinking thoughtfully about what the trombone can do and how that can present a piece for the audience.
Well, and kind of circling around to what we were talking about earlier, that probably there's this sense that the trombone does have a uniquely wonderful lyrical voice to be exploited.
Yeah, and the piece that I just played probably doesn't illustrate that as much as some of the other pieces mm-hmm. that I'm going to play. But there are many, many moments in the recital that are going to be extremely lyrical and just these long, spun-out melodies that feel like they just go on forever. And it's one of the challenges to make sure that your thread, your connection for the melody is active the whole way through so that it doesn't feel like it's lingering on for too long. So that's one of the challenges in particular.
Russ Holcomb, the principal trombonist of the Spokane Symphony. You're in what, about your fourth, fifth season? Something?
Oh, gosh, no. I just started my seventh season. Can
wow,
you believe
how
it?
Time flies, yeah. And so you've been here. You came out. There was a trombone opening. You played in Spokane. You thought you might be here just for a year or two and move on? Or what? How's this 7 years been?
Well, my first year here was actually a one-year contract because my predecessor, Kirk Ferguson, got a job with the Milwaukee Symphony, and we weren't sure whether he was going to come back or not. So I thought that I might move over here from Boston and get a year of good professional experience, and then if I didn't have the job anymore, I would head on back to Boston. Mm-hmm. But here I am 6 years after that fact, and I'm actually really enjoying Spokane. I hadn't been any further west than Colorado before I came out to audition for the orchestra, so it's been really nice to get to know the West Coast, and I've gotten to expand a lot of my outdoor hobbies like hiking and backpacking and camping and things like that.
Yeah, you recently went to the top of a mountain, didn't you?
Yes, I. It wasn't an incredibly tall mountain, but it was up in North Idaho, and you know, maybe around, I don't know, 7,000 something feet. And but it's almost not really important how tall the actual mountain is in elevation. It's more about how much hiking you have to do to get up to the top. And Idaho has just so much breathtaking scenery that I never would have imagined. Being, you know, growing up in Florida, living in Boston, you know, things are a lot more flat out in that part of the country. So I just thought of Idaho as, you know, sort of prairie land and potato farms. Mm-hmm. But I'm so delighted to discover how beautiful Idaho is.
Nice. And speaking of Florida, are there people you're worrying about?
Yes. All my family lives in Tallahassee, Florida. So they're all, I mean, I think I just got a text message from them this morning that the hurricane was passing over them. This morning, so my parents, two brothers, their girlfriends, my cousin, his wife, their two young children, and my aunt are all at my parents' house in Tallahassee in the basement weathering the storm. So I don't know if they have power to listen at the moment, but if they do, hope they're doing great.
Yeah, wow, that's a big, and then even through this time here, you've kept some contacts to the wider world, and you occasionally run off to Seattle or Boston or somewhere to get to play from time to time.
Yeah, I'm really lucky to get to go play with lots of other groups and orchestras. I still maintain a contract in the Vermont Symphony back in New England, which basically is like a paid work trip for me to travel. I always fly into Boston and I go see my old teacher Norman Bolter. And a good friend of mine, Carol Vieira, who I both admire and respect very much. And it's nice to be able to see them when I'm in Boston. In addition, I do get around in the West to play a lot. I pretty regularly play in the Seattle Symphony, the Oregon Symphony, the Utah Symphony, the Vancouver Symphony, and whoever else might want to call. But especially those four orchestras, I've been really, really lucky to play with them and gain the experience of what that is like to play with some of those major orchestras.
That must be fun, just because there's a lot of equality there, really good orchestras, just to see, are they kind of all the same, or are there unique qualities in each one?
Oh, there's definitely unique qualities. It's kind of a game of musical chameleon in a certain way, because when I sit down with one orchestra versus the other, you know how that orchestra plays and you have to sort of adjust yourself a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it's different because, you know, in Spokane we play the way we play here and that's sort of comfortable for me. But I do have to adjust certain things when I go to play other places. And you hope that you're, you know, doing it well enough and fitting in. And in some cases, I mean, a couple months ago, no, back in the spring, I played a week with the Oregon Symphony and then flew directly from there to Salt Lake City to play a week with the Utah Symphony. And to go from one to the other was just, you know, really having to turn on a dime, and to do that back-to-back was a unique kind of challenge.
Oh, fascinating. Does it have to do more with the exact section you're playing with and their needs and their balances and their sounds, or does it have to do more with the whole cloth of the orchestra?
I think usually when I'm subbing on second trombone, my primary concern is to be really blended with the section, the trombone section and the brass section. I do notice some differences in the string sound. I know probably mostly due to the conductor and how he asks the orchestra to produce the sound. But for most of my consideration, I'm thinking about what can I do to really fit into this trombone section and to be on the team, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Russ Holcomb, who's playing Wednesday night at 8 o'clock at Whitworth. It will be a recital of trombone and piano with the addition of the piece that we just heard him play for us. Now, thanks a lot for coming around.
Absolutely. Thanks, Vern.
We're going to go back to a little bit more of Ross in Memorex, as it were. I think what we'll do is add a couple more trombone players in here. Eric Awazin is a New York composer who's really done well by brass. A piece he wrote for brass called Eagle Hawk, in which Ross Holcomb is playing a trombone trio along with Joseph Fry and Bill Waterman. And you say this was a personal group of people for you.
Yeah, Joseph Fry was my main teacher in high school back in Tallahassee, Florida. He was doing his doctorate at Florida State. And I was with him for about 3 or 4 years during high school. And I hadn't seen him in about 11 years when I had business in Tennessee, so he invited me out to do the recital at his school, and it was just an absolute pleasure to see him after so long and to get to make music with my old teacher.
So let's enjoy hearing Three Trombones and Eagle Hawk by Eric Owaisen. And thanks for coming around. Recital that was played in Tennessee. My guest, Russ Holcomb, joined by two other trombonists, Joseph Fry and Bill Waterman, playing Eagle Hawk by Eric Owaisen. Once again, his recital Wednesday, 2 days hence, at 8 o'clock at the Whitworth University Music Building.